You're listening to The Taylor Marshall Show, episode 24. Today we're going to look at the seven lies that we like to believe about our own failures. It's going to be a great show. Howdy, and thank you for tuning in to The Taylor Marshall Show. This is the podcast for everyone who wants to create daily habits and learn enough theology to take their faith to the next level. You know, I'm really excited. I'm about to leave in 2 days to visit Mexico City to go to the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe. I've talked a little bit about that in previous podcasts, and this is in response to a vow I made to Our Lady, and I'm very excited. I'm going with a buddy of mine, Brandon Barker, and Scott Hahn's going to be there, and it's going to be a wonderful pilgrimage. So I will be praying for all of you, the listeners, and all the blog readers, and all the members at New St. Thomas Institute while I'm there before the miraculous image of Our Lady. Now this week, my goal is to confront seven lies that we actually enjoy believing about our own failures. Most of us have big failures in our life, things where we've messed up really bad on the spiritual level, on the level of relationships, sometimes in the realm of business decisions, financial decisions. You know, maybe you're in deep debt or you've lost a relationship or a marriage failed. So there are seven lies that we like to retreat to. So we're going to confront each one of those, and then we're going to focus on a more intentional way of handling these failures and to think about failures in a new light. Okay, and so don't worry. This episode's not going to bum you out, right? It's going to challenge you, and I think you're going to leave encouraged. Well, we have a great show today. We got the tip of the week. It's using a coat brush. You know, I get a lot of baby spit up and drool and snot on my church clothes. So I'm going to tell you how I handle that without spending a ton of money on dry cleaning. We've got our proverb of the week, of course, our featured segment, our seven lies that we like to retreat to. During the saint of the week, I'm going to talk about this tradition in the medieval era of portraying Saint Christopher with the head of a dog. Why did people do that? We're going to look at the reasons why. It has something to do with Latin. And then, of course, we have our Latin word of the week. So it's going to be a good show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with our joke. That's right. I forgot to announce. We're going to do a joke just like we did last week. I'm going to keep doing these jokes just to kind of bring some lightheartedness to the podcast until y'all say, oh, come on, Marshall, your jokes are horrible. Just stop. Just get to the content. So we'll be right back with our joke. I heard about an old man who was meeting with his doctor, and at the end of the appointment, he said, you know, doctor, I'm worried my wife is losing her hearing. Do you have any advice for me? So the doctor said, well, here's what you do. When you're home after work tonight, get on the other side of your house and say to your wife, honey, what's for dinner? And see if she can respond. Then get in the room next to her and say, honey, what's for dinner? And see if she responds. And if she still doesn't, get right up behind her and say, honey, what's for dinner? And see if she responds. So the old man thought that was good advice, and he went home, and he got across the house, and he said, honey, what's for dinner? No response. So he got into the room next to his wife, and he said, honey, what's for dinner? No response. So then he got up right behind his wife, and he said, honey, what's for dinner? And she turned around and says, Charles, darn it, for the third time, I said we're having chicken. All right, there's your clean joke for the week. Share it with your kids and share it with your colleagues. Bring a little bit of lightheartedness, a little levity to your life and those of others. Okay, so let's take a look at the tip of the week. It's using a coat brush. I actually learned this from watching Downton Abbey a while back. I noticed every time the butler was with the master, he would pull this little brush out, and the butler would, you know, brush his shoulders and his back before and after he put his suit on. So I was kind of interested in that, so I Googled it, and I learned about coat brushes and I purchased one. And it's been a big money saver and time saver, and here's why. So I have little kids, and usually on Sunday, we go to Mass, of course, and there's a baby, she, Elizabeth, we call her Lily Bell. She's, I think, 7 months right now. You know, as a dad, I always get these months confused. You know, you ask a dad, how old's your baby? And they're like, 6 to 9 months, under a year. So she's under a year. And then we have a two-year-old who, see, I even hesitated there. He's two. We have a two-year-old, Blaze. You've seen him in the videos, right? He's the crazy little blonde boy. And both of them have to go in and out of Mass because, as you know, the voice of a two-year-old is louder than the voice of 1,000 men. For some reason, when a two-year-old talks in Mass, everyone can hear the two-year-old. So my wife and I are constantly going in and out of Mass, right? And when you do this, the baby or the two-year-old will inevitably wipe their mouth or their nose on the front of your shoulder, either on the left side or the right side. There's a little spot there on your, usually on my right shoulder, where there's a little bit of spit up, a little bit of drool, a little bit of snot, and then it dries. And so you'll be talking to someone after Mass and say, you got something on your shoulder, and it's the brand, it's the mark of the parent, mark of the dad, right? Which is really annoying. And so you have to send your suit to the cleaners to get it fixed. Aha, that's where the coat brush comes in. So I got this coat brush, and I'd have these like little watermarks or a little spot there, like a little bit of two-year-old snot or something, and it was dried on there. So I took the coat brush, and you just rub it on there, and the thing comes right off. It's amazing, right? Or if you have like a little bit of food on your sleeve of your coat, you take this brush, and it's not cheap. I think it cost me $70. I'll put a link of the one that I use in the show notes for this podcast, all right? So go to taylormarshall.com and click the podcast button, and then go to episode 24, and you'll see the link there in Amazon to get the brush. Anyway, you just do that, and I do that with all my coats now, before and after I put them on. I've even trained Gabriel, who's 11, to brush it down, because it takes all the little hairs, the little specks of food, the pieces of cracker, whatever it is, it just takes it right out, and you don't have to send your clothes to the cleaner. It's a great way to save money and a great way to save time. And if you have your brush with you, if you keep one at work, you can just go right there on that spot, and it's gone. You know, if it's a dried something on there, water, food, juice, punch, it comes right off. So get yourself a coat brush and start saving money. And best of all, you'll feel like someone who owns a manor like Downton Abbey, right? Pretty cool. Okay, so there's a tip of the week. Right, and we're moving on to our proverb of the week. You know, those who are new to this show, we do a proverb every week because I'm convinced that the proverbs are God's advice book. You know, you need advice on something in your life. You need practical wisdom and prudence on how to live your life. Look no further. Look to the book of Proverbs. So this week's proverb is Proverbs 11, verse 29. It goes like this, quote, "He who troubles his household will inherit the wind, and the fool will be the servant of the wise," end quote. He who troubles his household. Look, you don't want to be the nuisance in your home. Whether you're the father, the mother, or one of the kids, you don't want to bring troubles into the home. All right, now there's a threat here. You'll inherit the wind. I think the idea here is if you're always causing trouble with your family and your house and your domestic situation, no one's going to want to help you out later down the road. That might be the case. Right, but also as a sign of charity, you don't want to bring trouble. What you want to bring is favor and blessings. So dads, when you come home from work, you've got to do the doorknob moment. I can't remember if I've spoken about this before on the podcast. If I have, indulge me. But the doorknob moment is you come home from work, you're exhausted, you're tired, the boss got after you, you just want to sit down on the couch and drink a beer. That's the mode that you're in. So you get to your home and you put your hand on the doorknob of the back door. And when you do that, you have to say a prayer, because when you turn that knob and open the door, you don't know what's going to be inside. You could have a wife who's stunningly beautiful, who has just made your favorite meal, or you may find your wife sitting on the kitchen floor crying and kids running around using crayons on the wall, right? You never know. So you have to have a supernatural outlook and say, God, give me the graces I need to move into this next phase of being home, right? Don't bring troubles into the household. And the same thing applies to wives, right? We want to bring blessing and honor and love, the warmth of the heart to the home, and also for children. You know, don't bring home troubles from school. Don't bring home bad report cards. Be a blessing. Be a messenger of peace. And then when we look at the second half of this proverb, the fool will be the servant of the wise. We see over and over in the book of Proverbs that living the cardinal virtues, prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance, as we talked about in the New St. Thomas Institute, you remember that by thinking this, peanut butter, jelly, French toast, PJFT, prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance, those are the traditional cardinal virtues enshrined in the Catholic Church. If you follow those natural virtues, those cardinal virtues, you will experience successes in life. You will experience successes. So if you are wise, you will make good decisions that will excel you in this life. If you are foolish, you will make bad decisions that will hold you back, right? So this verse is nicely balanced. The first part is about bringing peace and tranquility to your domestic situation. And the second half is using the virtues so that you don't become the servant of another, right? You don't want to become a fool that serves another. You want to be the wise man, right, who is excelling in life through daily habits that excel you, that bring you into God's favor. And that just equips you to be a blessing to more people around you, which is what Christ has called us to do. Okay, now let's get into this featured segment, the seven lies we enjoy believing about our failures. Man, oh man, I've had some failures in my life. I've had failures as a husband, as a father. I've had financial failures, I've had career failures, I've had failures as a child, failures as an adult, I've had failures in the past week, I've had even a failure today. Things don't often work out for us, and we experience these setbacks throughout our life, and we will likely experience them until the day of our deaths. That's what it's like living in this valley of tears. But how do we deal with those failures? Well, unfortunately, I think we retreat to deceptions or distractions in our own mind to justify the failures in our lives. And we're going to look at seven of those lies that we enjoy believing about our failures. And they range all over the place. Some of them may not apply to you. Some of them likely do. And we're going to go through each one of these, we're going to confront it, and then we're going to give the flip side of it, the positive take on it. And I think once we go through this exercise together, we're going to have a better outlook, not only about the past, but moving forward. And then at the very end, I'm going to reveal what I think is the key to analyzing our failures in light of God's providence, His sovereignty, and also in light of the grace that we receive from Him. Okay, so let's start off. The first lie that we enjoy believing about failures is this one. It's not my fault. I just had some bad luck. I've got news for you. If you're a Christian, there is no such thing as bad luck. God is in charge of everything. We don't live our lives according to horoscopes or lotteries. We live our lives with intentionality, because God has given meaning to the ordered universe that He created. And we can study nature, we can study the natural law, we can develop habits, we can cultivate virtues to succeed, right? So it's not luck. Things don't happen randomly. God is in charge, and He's calling on us to develop ourselves, you know, not only spiritually, but mentally and physically, to be a holistic saint, you know, a saint that brings in everything it means to be a human. We see this in Thomas Aquinas. We're not angels. We're not disembodied spirits. We are human. We have physicality, and our soul is built in such a way to engage with that physicality and also to control those 11 passions that are all stirred up because of original sin, all right? So we cannot blame bad luck or bad fortune. Number two, I failed because people were jealous of me, or I failed because other people tried to ruin me. It may be the case that people had it out for you. It may be the case that someone was terribly malicious, right? But you have to see failure in the big picture. We know that there are people who are out to get us. We know that we have enemies. Christ says, love your enemies. That presumes that you do have enemies. If you don't have any enemies, something's wrong, right? There will be people who will try to undermine you and destroy you. But part of prudence, that cardinal virtue, is making a preparation for those who want to hurt us. It's a preemptive strategy. Just like we prepare for natural disasters through insurance, or you buy home insurance for your house in case someone steals from you, the wise man, when he builds his house upon the rock, realizes that he will be attacked by the devil, by all of his minions, and by evil people who seek to hurt us and take from us, right? So we can't fully blame failures on other people, because then we'll never take action. What we have to do is build the fortress of our mind and of our spirit, and in some cases in history, actually go out and build a fortress to protect ourselves, right? So we can't just always point the finger. And sometimes, you know, to be honest, we make a big mistake, we fail in a big way, and we point the finger at other people. They may not have even been trying to be malicious. They may have just made an honest mistake. They may not even be aware of what happened. And it's easy to blame the other person, right? It's easy to blame others. Sometimes we played a part in it, and we need to look deep inside and do an examination of conscience and see that, you know what, we made some imprudent decisions there, and we need to come to terms with that, okay? Now, we get to the third lie, and it goes like this. I failed because I deserved it. I'm a bad person. God was just trying to get his pound of flesh from me. And to be honest, I've experienced this. You know, if you're a believer, if you, you know, read the scriptures and practice the faith and go to mass, go to church, God is a present reality in your life and in your mind. And when things go bad, when you experience a setback, our temptation is to look up at heaven and say, why me, God? Come on, can't you see everything I'm doing for you? Can't you see how I'm obeying you and doing all these great things in the world and making your life so great, God? And unfortunately, that attitude and those questions always lead to depression, right? We know that God is all good, but when we ask those kind of questions to God, the only answer is a bad one. Right, we are setting up ourselves, because God isn't usually, he's not usually going to open the heavens and respond back to you. That doesn't usually happen. So what happens is we fill in the answer for God, and it becomes very negative and very pessimistic and very discouraging. Trust me, I've been there, right? Or you can take it the other way and say, you know, I'm just a really bad person. That sin that I committed a while back, that evil thing that I did to those people, my infidelity towards God, that's why I'm having this failure. And sometimes we're connecting the dots where there are no dots. Sometimes we're kind of creating this Hindu system of karma or instant karma, where we're expecting that because we've returned to God or we're trying to live for God, that he still needs to get his pound of flesh, or he still needs to settle the score with us. And if you think of God as trying to settle the score with you, you've left the realm of Christianity. You are no longer thinking about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of King David, the God of the Peter and the apostles. Just if you read scripture often, you'll constantly be reminded that people are constantly screwing up, and yet God is always showing them favor. Just think about Peter. The guy messed up a lot, and yet Christ was always extending the hand. When Peter is sinking in the sea because of his fear, his unbelief, Christ puts out a hand. So I really don't think that God is trying to get that pound of flesh out of you, or that you're such a bad person that God is plaguing you with a lifetime of failures. Get over that. And I would encourage you, if you can, go back and listen to episode 21. Did I miss God's plan for my life? Episode 21. We tackle that theological question head on, and I think you'll be very encouraged by it. So go over to taylormarshall.com, click on podcast, and scroll down, click on episode 21, and you'll be encouraged. Okay, number four, the fourth lie we like to tell ourselves is this: if I hadn't failed back then, I'd be in a better position now. All right, this is a logical fallacy, right? But we think if that hadn't happened back then, I would definitely be better now. And you really don't know that. God is often teaching us things in our setbacks, and we don't have the eternal big picture that God has. Think about, you know, Joseph, not Saint Joseph, but Joseph in the Old Testament with the colored coat. He probably thought, yeah, you know, if I hadn't bragged to my brothers, I'd be in a better position right now. But what God was doing was elevating him to the second highest position in Egypt so that he could save his entire family, including his brothers who sold him out into slavery, right? So we can't judge our current place in life based on a past failure. In fact, that past failure may be slingshotting you into a greater place of prosperity, whether it be spiritual or physical or financial, right? God uses what is broken and what is evil to bring about what is good. That's the good news. That's the gospel, right? Christ will take a prostitute and turn her into a great saint of the church, Mary Magdalene. In fact, he'll choose the prostitute to be the messenger to the apostles, Mary Magdalene. Amazing. That's the God that we believe in, right? So don't blame your past failures on your current situation. Realize that those failures may be building up to a great success, a great blessing that God has in store for you. All right, number five, the fifth lie we like to tell ourselves is I'm entitled to whatever I lost. All right, so you think about the failure, you think about what was lost, and you say to yourself, I am entitled to that. Now, this kind of thinking also leads to bitterness and depression, because it's an entitlement mentality. I'm really against entitlement mentality because I read Thomas Aquinas, right? Actually, because I'm a Christian, right? The entitlement mentality stands 180 degrees against the mentality that we find in Scripture and that we find Christ teaching in the Beatitudes. We do not approach our family, our friends, our neighbors, and we don't approach God with an entitlement mentality. You know, the fact is we don't deserve anything, right? We cannot at the end of the day say, God, you owe me this, or so-and-so owes me this, right? Everything is a gift. So the proper response to this is not to sink into an entitlement mentality, which I guarantee will make you depressed, but instead to move into a gratitude mentality. So you say, well, you know, Taylor, you don't know. My life is really, really bad. My challenge for you is I bet you there's some really great blessings. There's something that you can be grateful for because I know God is good and I know that God brings goodness towards us every single day. It's there in the Bible, right? He is taking care of us, right? There are blessings in your life right now. You say, well, Taylor, you don't understand. My shoes are completely worn out. I am that poor. The answer is, yeah, but you have feet. There are some people who don't have feet to put shoes on. There's always a positive light, and you have to train your brain. You have to create a habit to think in a positive way, because when you do that, you'll be grateful. And one of the things I like to do, I think I've shared it on a previous podcast, is the ABCs of gratitude. So you start with A, and you say, you know, I'm so thankful for my sister, Amber, that's A. And then B, I'm so thankful for my brother. And then C, I'm so thankful for our Christmas vacation we had. And then D, and you just go through every single letter of the alphabet and you thank God for each thing you can think of. And guess what? You will think of everything all along the way, and you can probably do the alphabet over and over and over. it shakes you out of this depressed attitude of entitlement, and it brings you into the happy attitude of gratitude. Because when you thank God, you are brought into conformity with God's will. You know, the Eucharist, we love the Eucharist, right? The Eucharist, that word in Greek, Eucharistia, means thankfulness. Thankfulness. So that's what we're called to do. Gratitude. That's the answer. Now, number six is this lie. Because of my failure, I will never recover. You might think, I'll never recover financially. I'll never recover physically. I'll never recover mentally. I'll never recover spiritually. I did a sin that's so bad, I can never recover. I messed up so bad financially with my business, I will never recover. And the answer to that is not so. We believe in a miraculous God. We believe in a God of miracles. We believe in a God who says, behold, I make all things new. God can do miracles, and he can do a miracle in your life. He still does miracles. If you're not convinced, go read about Padre Pio. God still does miracles, and he can work a miracle in your life. Again, if you think to yourself, I've missed God's plan. I am so beyond recovery. I am so beyond rehabilitation. I have these addictions. I have these problems. Go back and listen to this podcast, episode 21, Did You Miss God's Plan for Your Life? Please go listen to that podcast, and you will realize that God has the ability to take you from 1,000 negative all the way up to 3,000 positive. He can move you along that fast. You just have to say yes to him. You have to believe, and you have to cooperate with his grace. All right? Now, number seven, the seventh line, this is the last one, that we tell ourselves about our failures is this: it's not my fault I was born this way. All right? Now, as a teacher, I heard this more often with younger people, but I think it's becoming more common in our culture, especially in the United States. I know there's people who listen to this podcast from all over the world, and I can only really speak from my own cultural context as an American. I think in the United States, we're gravitating towards this idea that, don't judge me, I was born this way. And, you know, while that may be the case in certain, you know, ways, if you were born and your legs don't function, well, yeah, you can't play basketball. But you know what? You can get in a wheelchair and play wheelchair basketball, right? There's always a positive spin that you can take on it, right? And I was born this way, I think, is kind of just another version of, well, God made this happen to me, right? It's a way to escape responsibility. And I think instead what we say is, God, when I was born, gave me these gifts, right? Look at it from the positive side, right? Yes, I was born of maybe this handicap or with this disposition, or I was born in this family, but also I was born with these positive elements. You know, I was born with an artistic mind. I was born with a great sense of humor. I was born with great organizational skills, right? And while we are born with certain setbacks, right, none of us are born perfect ever since Adam and Eve, God balances that out with new gifts, natural gifts that you're born with, but also supernatural gifts. And this is where this lie falls short, because God can take nature and he can perfect it. Thomas Aquinas teaches grace perfects nature. That means grace can come and take what's natural and ordinary in your life and elevate it into something miraculous, beautiful, and supernatural, something divine. And if you're a Christian, if you're a Catholic, this is what we are called to believe in. This is the worldview that we look out into the world, and this is how we see things, right? You can't just retreat and say, well, I was born this way. You have to believe that there's a God who can use grace and elevate what's natural and ordinary and make it awesome. Okay, so there it is. Those are the seven lies that we like to tell ourselves when we fail or in the face of failure. And now let's look at how we can think of failure in general in a positive way. So here we go. When I look at the failures of my own life, I try not to see them as failures. You may be thinking, well, that's deep. Now hold on with me. Okay, so everything that's happened in our life has happened for a reason. I really do believe that. It's hard to accept that when you're in the midst of it. But every single setback is a set up for something better. I believe that God is sovereign, that he has perfect providential care over us, and that he loves us. He's counted every hair on our head, every skin cell in our body, every heartbeat, every breath, and he's watching out for us, and he's bringing about everything for our better blessing. He wants us to be in heaven with him forever, but not only does he want that, he wants to bless us in this life. He blesses us all the time with great meals and a good wine and a joke with a friend and family time and holidays and all sorts of things that he gives us, even tiny things, you know, like a piece of fruit. All of those things are from his hand, and he loves us. And all of our failures, all the setbacks, are moving us towards the goal. In previous podcasts, we've talked about teleology. That's the study of ends, purposes, goals. And if we believe that God has established a goal for us, and then we have set up goals in order to reach that goal which he's established, that is, to get to the beatific vision of his divine essence forever in heaven, then at the end of the day, there really are no failures. Even when we mess up things royally, God has the graces to not only fix it, but to bring about something better, as we talked about in that podcast. Did you miss God's plan for your life? I guess in a sense, this podcast is sort of the sequel to that podcast, right? Which is, just as a reminder, episode 21, TaylorMarshall.com podcast, episode 21. So the only true failure is to go to hell. The only true failure is to commit mortal sin and not repent. The only true failure is not to believe in the one true God who loves us and wants us to be saved and with him forever. That's the only true failure. If everything else can be conformed to his will through grace and redeemed and perfected in some way, it's not truly a failure, because it's bringing about something better by his plan and his will. Okay, so there it is. The seven lies we tell ourselves about failure, and then the big picture perspective, which is, if we are earnestly and faithfully striving towards the kingdom of heaven, all of this will set us up for more grace and more blessings. Well, hey, did you hear that St. Christopher is not really a saint? Baloney, right? People say, oh, St. George is not a saint anymore. St. Christopher is not a saint anymore. St. Philomena is not a saint anymore. Don't believe them. That's all a bunch of hogwash. They are true saints. They are canonized. The canonization process, by the way, is infallible. So if a man or woman is declared a Catholic saint by the church, that's an infallible statement. It can't be wrong, and it cannot be revoked. That doesn't mean that some of the traditions that we have or legends that we have about the saints are all true or infallible. In fact, one of them about St. Christopher is very humorous, and I'm going to share it with you right now. In images, medieval images of St. Christopher, sometimes he appears with the head of a dog. You can see this in some Eastern Orthodox icons. I'm going to put one up in the show notes. So if you go to TaylorMarshall.com and you click on podcast and you come to the show notes for this show, you'll see an icon of St. Christopher, and he has the head of a dog, an animal head, D-O-G, head of a dog. And the reason for this is there was a confusion in the ancient manuscripts about the ethnicity of St. Christopher. According to tradition, and it's a valid tradition, it's pretty much universal, St. Christopher was a Canaanite. Now, if you know your Bible, the Canaanites were the great enemies of ancient Israel. They lived in Palestine, and they were supposed to be killed by King David and Solomon, but they never were fully wiped out. They were great sinners. They were known for their idolatry, child sacrifice, and illicit sexual relations. So St. Christopher descended from these people who were once the enemies of God, and he became a bearer of Christ. And in Greek, Christophoros means carrying Christ, carer of Christ, bearer of Christ. Now, because he was a Canaanite, in some Latin text, there was a confusion, and instead, he was thought of as a canonus, which in Latin means canine, right? It comes from the Latin word canis, which means dog or a hound, right? And so when they saw that he was a Canaanite, somewhere along the line, there was a confusion between him being a Canaanite and a canine. And so he was given the head of a dog. So he was like a mutant, a human with this dog head. So there's a little interesting saint fact for you at your next cocktail party. Feel free to share it. And please go to the site, taylormarshall.com, and check out that icon of St. Christopher with the head of a dog. And usually we go to our Latin Word of the Week, and we'll do that in just a moment. Before we get to our Latin Word of the Week, I just want to remind all of our members at the new St. Thomas Institute that we'll be announcing the new Certificate in Theology that you can earn. It's a one-year certificate in theology, and we'll be announcing that on March 7th, which is the 740th anniversary of the death of St. Thomas Aquinas. We're going to celebrate that by announcing our new program and some new features within the new St. Thomas Institute website. And until then, please feel free to enjoy and learn from the new classes that are coming out in February on the Eucharistic Theology of Thomas Aquinas. We have one on transubstantiation, one on who can and cannot receive Holy Communion. This has to do with politicians, public sinners, but also mentally handicapped people. You know, who can and cannot, and how does all that work? And a lot of other interesting questions that Thomas parses out for us. Also, he talks about the Last Supper, and I really love doing this section, the 12 mysterious actions of the liturgy of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. Thomas Aquinas goes through 12 there. We also do a little lesson on Aristotle on the difference between substance and accidents. We go through the 9 different kinds of accidents and how that helps us understand transubstantiation. So if you're a member of NSTI, head over there, newstthomas.com, and enjoy these new lessons here in February. And if you're not a member, please go over to newstthomas.com and watch the intro video there and see if it's right for you. You can learn theology, philosophy in just a few minutes every day, or maybe 15, 30 minutes every week. Okay, so our Latin word of the week this week is invidia. Invidia, it's the Latin word for envy or jealousy. And it comes from 2 Latin words, in and video, which means to look into. To look into. So it's kind of like we see our neighbor, we look into his garage, we look into his house, we look into what he has, and we become jealous. We become envious. It's one of the 7 deadly sins. And this happens to us when we compare ourselves to others and we see ourselves in light of what we do not have instead of all the blessings that we do have. This goes back to having that attitude of gratitude. So don't fall in to that deadly sin of invidia, envy. Instead, be grateful. Well, we have a gift offer for all of you that listen to the podcast here. It's available to everyone on taylormarshall.com. It's the book, Thomas Aquinas in 50 Pages. If you haven't read it yet, please do. It's a really easy, simple, quick way to learn the basic philosophy and theology of Thomas Aquinas in only 50 pages. It's free. You can get it for free. Just go to taylormarshall.com, and once you put in your email address there, it'll be emailed to you in a PDF format. You can take your time and read it as you like. And also, if you've enjoyed this podcast and you enjoy listening to these podcasts, please do me a big favor and go over to iTunes and rate it. You can give a 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 4-star, or 5-star, and please write something nice. You know, actually, just last night, I opened that up, and I was amazed by all the 5-star reviews, well over 100. And I started reading some of the newer ones, and I mean, it really touched me. You guys are so kind, so nice, and there's just really nice things said there, and it really just made the the day a great ending just to see all that those nice things that you've said. So thank you to everyone who has gone in there and taken the time. I know you're busy, to leave a review and leave a five-star rating. I really appreciate you, and it means the world to me. And also, if you haven't subscribed, please do. You can go to iTunes, hit the subscribe button. It's free, of course. And you'll get this podcast every single Wednesday. My goal is to do one every single week, 52 this first year. And so we're almost halfway there. So thanks again to everyone who's a subscriber. Thanks to everyone who has rated this and written something so nice. I truly appreciate you. I'm so grateful to all the listeners. This has become one of my most favorite parts of the week is recording this podcast. So thank you for allowing me to come into your headphones, into your speakers, and be a part of your week. And we'll close by saying, remember, our Lord Jesus Christ said that you are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. So go out there and be salty. Peace out.